Okay, here we go. Don't worry, Gans, you're not late. You looked worried, you looked nervous. First session, we talked about the importance of administrative leaders in the early church. Second session, we talked about how to think like a leader. And now I want to talk about how to act like a leader. And this has nothing to do with dress code or any of that type of stuff, but what you actually do and how you relate to people. Jesus was probably the greatest leader ever. The question is, how did he transform 12 not very educated, not really sharp, provincial young people into world changers? How did he do that? What leadership lessons can we learn from him? Three of them, real simply here. Number one, Jesus built a team. So if you want to act like a leader, then you need to build a team. And it seems to not go, sometimes we think a leader is that one who goes and gets the job done. No, the leader is the one who builds a team to get the job done. I remember, when you think about this, the kind of people, when you build a team, you start by choosing who's going to be on your team. I remember years ago, I have a good friend who has a large church here in the city, and he's an American missionary. And from the very beginning of this church, from 1984 until about the year 2000, I was spending 10 months here, and I would be gone overseas raising my MPD support for 2 months. So 10 months here, 2 months in the States. And while in the States, I would travel around a different week to different churches and preach. And then that changed a little bit in somewhere along the line that changed. I started spending about, maybe 3 months, maybe 4 months in the States. Now, of course, it's different. But in those days when I would leave, even in the early days of the church, the first year of the church, I never got import speakers. So this church was 6 months old or 1 year old, and I would leave and empower the local leadership, June and Ferdy and whoever, Manny Moletta and Winston and those guys. It wasn't how most missionaries did things here in those days, maybe even now. So I have friends who pastor churches, and then they would go to the States. And I had one friend particularly, every time he has a very large church in the city, and every time he would go to the States for years, he would have me come as a guest speaker for a couple of weeks at his church. And after doing this for a few years, I finally said, look, you don't need me to keep coming and preaching. All your people ever see is you, an American here preaching, and then when you leave, you fill up your pulpit with missionaries. Why don't you ever get Filipinos to preach? And he said, well, I don't know any who can preach. It was a pretty small circle he lived in, obviously. And I said, well, I have a whole bunch of them, so next time you take a trip, don't invite me. I'll send some guys over to preach. So next time, year he left to go raise his support in the States, instead of me preaching, this is probably 18 years ago, I sent June 1 week and Ferdy 1 week, and I forgot, maybe Manny Carlos, I forgot who I sent. But it was three different people from our staff, 3 different weeks, and when my friend came back from the States, he said all of his people were talking about these young preachers and how great they were. And so he had been running his church like a typical missionary, where basically it was all the missionaries did all the ministry and everybody else sat there. So he asked me, he said this question. He said, Steve, where did you find these leaders? I've not seen leaders like this. My response to him was, you don't really want to know. He said, no, I do want to know. Where did you find such great leaders? I said, well, they didn't look like this when I found them. And he kept pressing, where'd you get these guys? I said, well, I got them in the U-Belt. I found them as teenagers fresh off of the bus from the province and preached the gospel to them and saw them get saved and baptized and filled with the Holy Spirit. And they didn't look like they do now when I found them. It took many years for them to get to where you saw them. And here's what he asked me, seriously. He said, He asked me if he could hire some of them. He said, you have so many good leaders. Could I just hire some for my church? And my response was, you can try. I said, give it a shot. Of course, they're all still here, so apparently he didn't offer enough. Or I don't think it would have mattered how much he offered, because it was family. And I think the answer is, if you want to grow leaders, you need to grow your own. You need to. But eventually, he did hire some leaders and had a pretty ugly church split at one point. It was sad. And he has, and since then, raised up some really great Filipino leaders and some really great local leaders, and has really done an amazing job. But I think the first start, if you want to act like a leader, you build a team. And what does the team look like? You don't build a team of leaders. You build a team of whoever God's connecting with you, and then you see them become leaders. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 31 says, brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Think about that a minute. When you were called, not many of you were wise by human standards. This is Paul encouraging the Corinthians. Think about where you came from. Not many were wise. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. And so I think about that. Not many were wise. Not many were highly educated. Not many had any sort of influence, noble birth, prestigious families they came from, and all of that. No, it's not what this church was about. Never has been, still isn't. Verse 27, but God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are. Verse 29, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God, that is of our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. And the Corinthians were priding themselves in being a bit sophisticated and sort of above the average provincial person that maybe wandered into their wealthy and impressive city. And so Paul's saying, no, that's really not. Don't think of yourselves that way. Really, most of the leaders were not influential or impressive or highly educated or all that. Every now and then somebody comes through. And the bottom line is this. You can never be too small for God to use, but you can be too big for God to use. You can never be too weak for God to use, but you can be too strong. When you think you're something that you're not, when you think more highly, you can never be too insignificant for God to use. But you can be too significant in your own eyes. And that seems to be the point. So when you're building your team, and from the very beginning here, like I said, we didn't come to reach leaders. We came to reach future leaders, which meant everybody. We weren't attracting leaders. That's not what we were doing. We were attracting whoever was hungry and open to the gospel, and then we built leadership into their lives. Here are my top three team builders. You want to build a team? Number one, pray together. If your team's not functioning like a team, it's functioning like a bunch of individuals, one of the best things to do is start praying together. You know, after all, you are working for a church and a missions organization, so praying is probably a good thing every now and then. You become close to the people you pray with. And when you pray together, you have to deal with all of the offenses. Or else you just have the word hypocrite screaming in your head. You have to deal with stuff. So you want to build a team? Number one, pray together. Number two, sacrifice together. Pay the price together. The reason a lot of our early days people are, the relationships are tight, because they were sleeping on the same floors together and sacrificing and splitting the same food together. There was sacrifice that happened. Sacrifice brings people close together. And thirdly, eat together. Look, I don't need to tell you that. You're Filipinos. You know, every significant relationship in your life revolves around food. And so if you want to build your team, then you add some food to it from time to time. It was interesting. Once I had been leading our apostolic team for, you know, over 20 years. Once Pastor Manny took over, there's been free-flowing food at every meeting we ever have. It's been interesting. That's about the main change of leadership from me to Pastor Manny. My son was commenting when we had that strategic training, summit in Alabang. I think it was every 30 minutes, the waiters came with a new bowl of snacks, chips, candy, and then the pre-lunch snack was a full meal of spaghetti and bread, and it was like it was just crazy. It was free-flowing food, but the team comes together around food. I noticed there's food back there. This is supposed to be a class we're teaching, and there's food constantly. So if you want to build a team, pray together, sacrifice together, and eat together. We had something the other day at our home on a Sunday night in Nashville, and it was the church. When we're in Nashville and not traveling, then the congregation we're involved in is in the midst of a building program, about to build a new facility for the children's ministry, because the children are stuffed in this. It's a bad facility, and so we decided to host an initial fundraiser and talking to leaders at our home. And it was, you know, there was around about 30, 35 people at our home on a Sunday night. And I can't tell you the number of comments that people gave me afterwards about the significance of being invited into our home and to be able to sit around our home and spill their coffee and crumbs all over our furniture. There's something about that that brings a team together around a meal, especially if it's if some of you are able to do that in your home, some of you are not. But anyway, if you want to build your team, that's what I say, team builders. You can do all kind of silly team builder games and all that, but there's nothing that builds a team better than praying together and sharing the sacrifice together, whether that's physical or financial or whatever else, and then just eating. There are other things you can do to build a team, but those were my thoughts. Okay, so if you want to act like a leader, number one, you build a team. Number two, you lead your team. Just because it's a team does not mean there's no leader. There has to be a leader. It's not a team of equals. Equal before God, yes. Equal in saved and spiritual, you know, whatever, yes. Equal in righteousness, yes. Equal in the roles, no. There is a team leader. And while you need to treat people with respect and maybe friendships will develop out of that, someone needs to lead the team. So build your team and then lead your team. Leadership must provide clarity, and leadership must provide unity. Someone has to lead the team, meaning you have to clarify the vision, the values, the priorities. Even if you've clarified vision and value, and you're not creating those, you're clarifying what we already have. When you're leading a team here, you don't have the authority to go create new vision or change it. Your job is just to clarify and communicate the vision you've received from the organization you're working in. Same with the values. You have to clarify the lanes. What I mean by lanes, I know we all are used to driving here in Manila, so lanes don't mean anything. But imagine you're in the UK, or you're in Japan, or Singapore. Is Subic, does it work that way in Subic? Okay, there's a... it's an anomaly. There are lanes. And here in Metro Manila, the yellow stripes and white stripes on the road are basically just decoration. But when you get to Subic or Japan, there actually are lanes, and you're supposed to stay in the lane. Now, you have to define the lanes for your team. You're the leader. And a lot of the conflict and the problems that happen on teams, it has to do with people not understanding their lane. And what happens in a car, not here in Manila, because people are amazing drivers here. But in Japan, if someone gets out of their lane, they normally hit someone else. Here, they don't. When someone gets out of their lane, the other one just moves. It's just fluid. It just sort of works. But nowhere else in the world, except maybe Mexico City or India, maybe it's like this. But they're all those little... whatever you call those things. Yeah, those. So when you don't clearly mark the lanes, people run into each other and people get conflict on your team. So you have to clarify vision, value, priorities, but also lanes. And a lot of what you do as a leader, you're a traffic director. And sometimes that gets frustrating. You think, why do I keep having to do this? No, it's one of the things I do. When I return to the Philippines after being gone a month, I have to be the traffic director. No, that's not your lane. No, you're not Carlos's boss. No, you're not the senior pastor of that church. That's his role to do that. No, as a leader in the team, that's what you do. You have to clarify lane. The more traffic directing you do, maybe the lanes aren't clear. And maybe the priorities aren't clear. Because there's a lot to do. And I know in every one of your departments, there are people frustrated working. Maybe you're frustrated, but working with you on your team if you're the leader. And it might be because there's five things here to do and they don't know which one to do. You need to set the priorities. That's part of your job as a leader. I had a... the first few seminary courses I took, I had a guy gave me a tip that really helped me. So it's the first graduate level courses I took after, you know, I finished university. Now I'm taking master's stuff. And here's what he told us. He said when he got his PhD in the seminary, I forgot where he studied. This was now I'm talking about Reformed Theological Seminary where I was taking classes. And here's what he told us up front. He said, I wasn't told this in the program I was in, he said, but I would later on figure it out that they assigned us about three times as much reading as could possibly be done. And it was intentional, so we would be forced, like in a real life situation, when you get in ministry, there will always be more to be done than can possibly be done. There just aren't enough hours in the day. And so you have to do triage. You have to start deciding this gets done, that doesn't. If you try to do it all, you lose your mind or your marriage or your health or whatever. And so he told us up front, he said, I'm going to assign to you more work than can humanly be done. You're going to have to figure out which is important and which is not. I'm not telling you. I appreciated at least him telling me that up front. So you know what? I didn't read any of it. I just sort of skimmed it because I had a real job. I didn't have that much time, but I learned a few things. But I think that's really kind of how it is sometimes. But as the leader, if your leader doesn't set priorities, then we have chaos. Because most of us have more to do than can possibly be done this week. If you don't, then either, I don't know what, why. Maybe Carlos can dump some of what he has to do on your department. And so that's not to make an excuse for not getting work done, but there are priorities. This has to be done, this can wait, or this could, maybe we never do that. But that's real life. So you want to act like a leader. Number one, build a team. Number two, lead your team. I want to show you one of the pictures of leading a team. And we began session one with talking about complaints. Growth causes complaints. All organizations end up with complaints. And I want to show you about 2 minutes or 3 minutes at most. Here's a scene from Saving Private Ryan, one of my favorite all-time scenes of that movie. And it's about leadership. The reason I love it is what you're going to see, Tom Hanks, this is amazing leadership. You watch the complaints happen and watch how he, as a leader, deals with the complaints. And this is how he leads his team. Watch this leadership. The authority structure doesn't change, but watch how he leads the team and how he deals with complaints. Okay, can you roll it? We've got it right there. Volume and all. How many of you saw Saving Private Ryan? Okay, anybody has not seen it? You're kidding. The first 20 minutes is pretty gruesome. Watch it like this. Filters out half. But then after that, it's a great leadership movie. Yeah. Pretty amazing roster of actors in there, too, who have gone on to become huge. A lot of them were nobodies then. All right, Otto, help. Here we go. They've been given an assignment to go save Private Ryan, which is, it doesn't make sense to them. They don't like, you ever gotten an assignment you didn't like from the higher-ups? Anybody? You ever gotten an assignment that didn't make sense? Okay, we're stalling. Otto, what's happening? I saw it a minute ago. Can you come up here? You and Dexter come up here and act it out. You're Tom Hanks. Dexter, you do the Vin Diesel role. Okay, come on up here. Vin Diesel, he died pretty quick in the movie. Yeah. Yeah. He's the guy who got shot when they got the little baby from the window, and then he was shot, and then the sniper took out the other. Yeah, it's Vin Diesel. Okay. Okay. Rewind it. Volume up. Do we have volume? Great. No volume. Okay. Back it up to the start.
What do you know about brotherhood?
Back it up to the start.
Why don't you ask the captain where he's from?
Yeah, ask the captain. I'll tell you everything you want to know about him.
These are the only lights that need to be turned off.
Hey, drop dead, Corporal.
Gotcha.
And another thing, every time you salute the captain, you make him a target for the Germans. So do us a favor, don't do it. Especially when I'm standing next to him. Capiche?
Hey, capiche. Corporal, what's your book about? Hey, what's your rifle?
Actually, it's about the... supposed to be about the bond of brotherhood that developed between soldiers during war.
Brotherhood? What do you know about brotherhood?
Some
get a load of this guy, Fish. Why don't you ask the captain where he's from?
Yeah, ask the captain. I'll tell you everything you want to know about him.
You want to explain the math of this to me? I mean, where's the sense of risking the lives of the eight of us to save one guy?
20 degrees. Anybody want to answer that?
Driver, think about the poor bastard's mother.
Hey, Doc, I got a mother, all right? I mean, you got a mother. Sarge's got a mother. I mean, shit, I bet even the captain's got a mother. Well, maybe not the captain, but the rest of us got mothers.
There's not a reason why there's but to do and die.
La 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 la. What the fuck is that supposed to mean, Corporal, huh? We're all supposed to die, is that it?
Papa's talking about our duty as soldiers.
Yes, sir.
We all have orders we have to follow, and that supersedes everything, including your mothers.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Even if you think the mission's FUBAR, sir?
Especially if you think the mission's FUBAR.
What's FUBAR? Oh, it's German. Yeah.
You never heard of that.
Sir, I have an opinion on this matter.
Well, by all means, share it with the squad.
Over my way, thank you, sir. This entire mission is a serious misallocation of valuable military resources.
Yeah, go on.
Well, it seems to me, sir, that God gave me a special gift, made me a fine instrument of warfare.
Driven, pay attention now. This is the way to gripe. Continue, Jackson.
Well, what I mean by that, sir, is you used to put me in this here sniper rifle anywhere up to and including 1 mile of Adolf Hitler with a clear line of sight, sir. Pack your bags, fellas. War's over. Amen.
Oh, that's brilliant, Bumpkin. Hey, so, Captain, what about you? I mean, you don't gripe at all?
I don't gripe to you, Riven. I'm a captain. He's a chain of command. Gripes go up, not down, always up. You gripe to me, I gripe to my superior officer, so on, so on, so on. I don't gripe to you. I don't gripe in front of you. You should know that as a Ranger.
I'm sorry, sir, but let's say you weren't a captain, or maybe I was a major. What would you say then?
Well, in that case, I say this is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective, sir. Worthy of my best efforts, sir. Moreover, I feel heartfelt sorrow for the mother of Private James Ryan. I'm willing to lay down my life and the lives of my men, especially you, Ryan, to ease her suffering.
He's good.
I love him.
Okay, you can cut it there. We don't watch the rest of the movie. But the point was, these guys were griping, complaining about their mission. But as the leader, what he said, it was okay for them to complain to him. But he said, gripes go up, complaints go up. And you watch how he dismantled and dealt with. Okay, then the guy said, well, what if I was your major? And then what would you say? And then he still wasn't going to gripe to him. He said, this is a great mission and all that. So you got it. But I think that leadership of how do you deal with complaints. Complaining is not a bad thing. But if you're going to lead your team, you're going to have to deal with complaints. And you've got to make sure they're going up so the problems can be solved, okay? And finally, how to act like a leader. Number one, build a team. Number two, lead your team. And number three, trust your team. If you trust your team, you will empower. If you don't trust, you will micromanage. trust your team. If there are people on your team and you don't trust them, then you need to deal with it, and they shouldn't be on your team. So I don't mean if they're personal, petty, emotional issues, but if there are serious trust issues of competency or commitment, then they don't need to be on the team. It is not the people you fire who torment you. It's the people you don't fire. I don't lose sleep over people once we fire them. Sorry, but I don't. I do lose sleep over people we should fire, but we don't. Okay? No hint for anybody here, okay? You're all okay. But if somebody's on the team and you don't trust them, you need to either work out the trust issues or they don't need to be on the team. Trust and empower. Think about how Jesus empowered people. The Great Commission was given to people who had recently denied him and left him and walked away and were doing their own thing. John 21, 15 through 19. Here's what he said to you all are familiar with this, John's account of this of this encounter with Peter. When they finished eating, that's Jesus building a team by eating together, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again he said, "John, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because he asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." The passage goes on, but basically Peter has denied Jesus, but Jesus now, just a few days later, is empowering him to go out and do ministry. Jesus trusted him in spite of his failures and his mess ups. And so if you have a standard of perfection, you're going to have a hard time trusting anyone because nobody will ever meet that standard. If you're going to be an empowering leader, you're going to have to make peace with mistakes. I don't mean you should never make peace with bad attitudes. You should never make peace with rebellion and insubordination. But you have to make peace with mistakes, with innocent, legitimate mistakes, because everybody will make them. There's a big difference in an attitude issue, an integrity issue, and someone making a mistake. And people need to be corrected for mistakes, not rebuked and not chastised. It's correction, and you need to turn those mistakes into teachable moments and continue to build trust in your team and form your team, and that's part of leading them. I remember one of the surprises, a leadership moment for me that kind of surprised me. I think it was my 40th birthday. That's been so long ago, it's hard to remember now. But I think it was, there was a surprise party Okay, that's not it then. Because this was at, Weston. So that wasn't a birthday. That was something about, was it our 15th anniversary, 20th anniversary of the church or something like that? So that was, okay. All right. Somehow, whatever we were doing, okay, it wasn't a church anniversary. All right, anyway, we were there at Weston, and people were going around and taking a moment and saying nice things about me, honoring me. So it must have been my birthday. Yeah, but I guess it wasn't 40th, but because that was at Renaissance. I don't know which one this was. Okay, yeah, but that was an anniversary of the church. That was some kind of anniversary, World Trade. Edwin, you've got the history right there. What was the World Trade? What anniversary was that? There's a picture in there of World Trade. Remember that? That was not a church anniversary. Because Rice was there. That was launching the development, financial development campaign for the building. Okay, so it was. All right. Anyway, what I remember, people where there was a time when people, so I guess it was coincided with my birthday, and people were. It was a surprise party for me. So I was after the thing where we did the building launch. Then we went over there supposedly to have, for whatever the ruse was, to go have and then open the door and all these people are there. But when people started honoring me, I was shocked at what they said. I was very surprised. And one by one, I think Joey was the first one. He started talking about the thing in my leadership that had impacted his life the most was that I trusted him. And he described what he meant by that. He talked about how little confidence he had in his own life, not in business. He had a lot of confidence in that, but as far as being a spiritual leader, but yet I trusted him with spiritual things, and that impacted him. And then Manny talked about similar thing, and they all kept saying that one of the most important things that I had done in their lives to help shape their lives, me as a leader into their lives, was trust. I had never thought about leadership in those terms ever until that moment. And the same thing, it wasn't coordinated, it just was spontaneous what people kept saying, at least a lot of the pastors that I had worked with. And I began realizing that I think all of us are beneficiaries of someone believing in us and trusting us and believing in us when we didn't believe in ourselves. And that's what I mean by this. If you're going to act like a leader, you need to trust people. You need to believe in people. You need to have confidence in what God can do in their lives. I don't mean trust that, okay, if I tell them a secret, they won't tell their best friend. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean trust, believing in them, having confidence that God is going to do something through their lives. And there are a lot of us became something else, and we were able to really become something else at a greater level because someone else had a lot of belief in us and a lot of faith in us and gave us a chance and gave us an opportunity and didn't get freaked out when we messed up and when we failed and when we did dumb things. Again, doing dumb things is one thing. Having a bad attitude is another. So attitude is a different thing here, but I think we'll all make mistakes and mess things up and have blunders. And so we need to be gracious with that, and we need to be ruthless with bad attitudes. I don't mean be mean with people with bad attitudes, but ruthless. You cannot allow bad attitudes in a team. It wrecks it. Mistakes don't mess things up, really. So anyway, if you're going to act like a leader, and we look at how Jesus led, I think the starting point of that is you've got to build a team. Jesus did, Paul did. It's always been a team. Then you have to lead that team. You're still the leader, even though it's a team. You're not the dictator, but you're the leader. And everybody will have a different leadership style. And it's interesting, some of the leadership circles I'm in here when I return here. When I watch a meeting that Manny leads, Manny is an amazing facilitator. And Manny gets people to talk and put stuff out on the table. He's fantastic. Ferdy leads entirely differently. Ferdy is a lot more of a, I don't know what his strength finder things are, but Ferdy's a lot more aggressive. And what happens is Manny's meetings are a lot longer. When Ferdy leads the same meeting, it's a lot shorter. There might be less input, but they're both great leaders. And they both have tremendous strengths in their leadership, and they get where they're trying to go. So I think it's not, when we talk about leadership, it's not trying to copy someone else, because your leadership style doesn't need to be like whoever else in the next department or whoever you're replacing and whoever's there before you. It's not. All of us have very different leadership styles. I watch it in my own sons. They all are effective leaders, but they're all extremely different in the way they go about it. And I'm watching them as they've become adults, and my James and Jonathan are running a business that they started, and they've merged with another one, and I'm watching their leadership is completely different the way Jonathan and James do it, but they're both effective in what they do. Sometimes there's conflicts because they see how to get from here to there in totally different ways, but they're both valid. And I think you've got to, as you lead your team, you're not copying people. But anyway, so the last thought on that is just trusting and empowering, and I think that's maybe one of the best things you can do for the people coming under you is, and that's what, when I mentioned that Ryan was observing me at the Ignite conference, what I was doing was trying to affirm people, because I know the moment you step off of a stage, whether you just made an announcement, led worship, or preached, the first thought that hits you is everything you should have said, and then you're going, I can't believe I said that way, and that you're tormented. And so I wanted to be the first one there before the devil met him at the bottom stair tell him how horrible it was. I wanted to beat him to the punch and go, that was amazing, especially when you said that. That was powerful. That was life-changing. And I think as leaders, we need to do that, knowing there's an accuser and there's accusation, and all of us are extremely insecure, every one of us, me, you, all of us are. But we can either help people become more insecure as leaders, or we can help diffuse that insecurity by the words we speak of affirmation and putting our confidence in what God can do in and through their lives. So that's the kind of leader, I think Jesus was like that, and I think that's, anyway, to act like a leader, that's the simple, simple explanation of it. Okay, let's take a few minutes and just talk about what we just talked about, okay? Leadership, complaining, griping, building a team, leading a team, trusting leaders. Let's talk about that, right? Okay, any summary thoughts from anyone? Questions, comments, your last chance before we break. Question, comment. Okay, Gans.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
No, we were talking about gripes.
You gonna gripe now?
Yeah, some of us being professional gripers.
Okay. Give us your top 10 right now.
No. I'm getting fat here. No. Seriously. We were talking about the phenomenon of skip level griping.
Skip level
griping.
Okay, explain
yeah.
that to me. That's a new one.
No, it's like, take for example, you have a volunteer who's offended by another volunteer. Okay, said volunteer could talk to other volunteer or could talk to the leader of the team, other volunteers, but he or she chooses to skip the level, not talk to the volunteer, not talk to that leader, and go to a pastor, which happens a lot, am I right? So how, it's not a culture thing, but I think maybe where we're coming from, it happens often. How does one address that? What practical tips do we have for...
Why does that happen?
Well, we were discussing earlier about what Dex said at the start of the session, you know, that some people feel that they have to go straight to the pastor instead of going to an admin or going to a lay leader. It may be a variety of things. I don't have anything specific, but it's just, you know, the very nature of volunteer management. It's sometimes automatic that... If they're close to a pastor, they'll just naturally go to the pastor instead of going to the person who actually is empowered to handle the situation. We were just laughing here.
What did you call it?
Skip level. It's a corporate thing.
Skip level. Did you make up skip level? Or?
No, sir. Well, I learned about that at Benilde when I was in industry.
Actually, it's a cultural thing for us. Because we're not confrontational people. So we'd rather, and because the person also cannot really trust the head of the ministry to actually help them solve the issue, they'd rather go to a pastor because whatever they're feeling, it feels like, you know, how Catholics are where you go to a priest, you confess, and you vent out exactly how you feel. And whether that thing gets solved or not, you've said your piece. You said it all out. So it also has a lot to do with the cultural thing. And how to deal with that? Don't be insecure. Tell your leaders, don't be insecure about it. That's where their comfort level is. And then help them address the situation and try to talk to them. I heard there's something like this. How would you want us to help?
Okay, anybody else? Does that happen to anybody else or just Gans? Skip level griping, is that common? Here's what one thing I would say is that I would try to figure out why. In other words, if there's a skip level, that's a new, good, nice new technical term there. Right now, I know Paul Barker's up teaching in the campus ministry school. He's right now cringing, and he doesn't know why, because I didn't thoroughly erase the board. Right now, he's upstairs going like this, and but he can't. He knows somewhere in the universe, there's a board that's not fully erased, and he really is. Anybody else bothered by that in here? Who else is, some of you are, honestly. Anybody bothered? Okay, a few of you. That can be treated. It's called OCD. Okay? Well, let me erase that. Okay, so skip gap. So you've got a volunteer, and then you've got the, what would that be? That would... And so what Tom Hanks said is gripes go up. You don't gripe down. You don't gripe parallel. You gripe up. But what happened? So then you got the... So he griped too far up, right? So what he did, so skip level griping. Okay, that's an art form now in Victory. So he skipped a level. Really, I think there's two thoughts on that. Number one is... If I'm the level that keeps getting skipped, I need to find out. I need to look in the mirror and see how approachable I am. Now, I'm not saying you're the problem, but you might be. Because if this guy gripes to me, and every time he gripes, it's like that game where you bop the mole heads down, and I don't give any legitimacy to it, then they're going to skip me. If I find that people are skipping my level constantly, I might be the problem. There's a possibility it might be that I'm not approachable, or it might just be that I'm too busy and they can't ever get to me, or when they get to me, I don't really listen and I don't really pay attention, and they leave there not feeling like anything's going to happen. Might be, maybe. Or maybe they just have a relationship here, or maybe they're the problem. But there's a lot. I think you got to figure out, why does this happen? And if there's a pattern that keeps on happening and I'm involved in that pattern, there might be something about me that needs to change. Okay? Or it could be that this pastor has set this place in order, but he's never really taken his hands off, and he's empowering a dysfunctional system. Okay? So it might be here, or the problem might be there, really. That... Because what happens if somebody, okay, here's another level here, okay? If this guy skips him to you, okay, this is you right here. The question is, what do you do? Do you push it back down to there like Tom Hanks did? Or do you go ahead and deal with it and skip him? If you have a pattern of doing that, then that's just the way it's going to be. So I think it gets back to here. What does this guy do? And if that's a continuous thing of... allowing that type of thing. Because that, in some situations, it's not a problem, but if it's habitual, it becomes dysfunctional. So don't get upset if it happens occasionally, but if it becomes the routine, then something is wrong. And sometimes it might need, within that structure, somebody can't solve it. You might need someone from over here to look in that and help figure out what's wrong. So if it's happening and I don't know, this is all hypothetical, but there's something like that happening at Victory Green Hills, it might take your counterpart in another, okay, you're griping parallel. If we're trying to solve it, that's not, well, this isn't griping, but you find your counterpart in the Ford or Alabog and say, here's what keeps happening to me. Help me here, because they're in the same situation. If you go to some random other person, they might not even understand what's going on. But sometimes I think we have the advantage in the church world of having 16 sites here, so there's a lot of parallel people doing the same thing you're doing and probably encountering the same issues and the same bumps that they may have been able to solve. So you can either go there to your counterpart in another one and help you, or you can... So anyway, it is a problem, but I think we need to... I think the first thing we start figuring out, how am I doing something to cause it? So this is probably the last one, or maybe one more, and then we'll...
Just a thought about that concern.
Yeah.
I think it also reveals the level of clarity.
Right.
I think it also reveals the level of clarity, which is our responsibility as leaders to guard, because people would normally give feedback to whom they feel like would listen to and would act upon the concern. So it's also a question of trust. So it can reflect clarity and trust. And so if it gets voiced out, then it's okay, this person trusts this person to air it out, but it's our responsibility as a team to channel it back on the function so that it actually gets solved, because sometimes it can get lost in the mix. Like somebody says something and everybody forgets about it because they thought it's just a complaint that, okay, I'll just listen and I feel for you. But if we guard the clarity and the trust within the team, we can also channel it back so that it doesn't have to become a culture in any organization or in our setting.
Excellent. That good point. If you haven't clarified the lanes, they may not even be aware they're doing something that's not the best way to do it. They may be oblivious to it, so that's a good point. That's, again, looking in the mirror and going, am I doing something wrong here? It might be that you haven't made that clear. Very good. And I think when that will happen to all of us at some point or another. It will. It's just the way it is. And so the question is, how do you deal with it? Do you get all insecure, and how dare you bypass me and go to... And if you start reacting out of insecurity, you just create... You're throwing gasoline on the fire. And so I think we've got to be secure, and we have to be thick-skinned, difficult to offend. We need to have tough skin and tender hearts. But most people have thin skin and hard hearts. It's not the way a leader should be. A leader has to have very thick skin but a compassionate heart for people. But if we start getting a calloused heart and thin skin, easily offended, and every little thing we take personally, leadership just spins out of control and goes from bad to worse. So please don't take any of these things personally when stuff like that happens, because it will happen. As Vito always said, it's business, not personal. Okay, and that's what all this is, okay? You can understand all of life if you can understand the Godfather. Okay? The first two. The third one's not, it's not part of the canon. It didn't count. They should have changed the name. Okay. Any last comment before we go? Carlos, there were several things that I shouldn't have said that don't need to be on this podcast, so please make sure we note those. And also the part about Otto being late. I don't want Paul to hear that. And okay, you owe me, though. You will one day, as Vito said, one day. I'll call you. Yes. Okay. Listen, once again, I just want to leave you with this thought. Thank you for what you do and how you serve this ministry, whether it's the church or whether it's every nation and all that you do. And really, I'm very grateful for the role all of you play, and it's significant, important, and it needs to be multiplied. We need a lot more of you. We need across the board leadership to increase, but we really, I think, in a lot of the roles you're in, probably more a more drastic need than a lot of other places. So, anyway, thank you.